Hello, I'm John Mao. This is number 0414, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0414. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll have another chance to hear from clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber. This time around, he talks about an interesting study that may prove smartphones make us stupid.
The study was pretty interesting. They gave people a cognitive test with their cell phone visible on their desk, turned on, turned off, upside down. Then they had them get up and put the cell phone in another room and walk in and take another equivalent cognitive test, like immediately after. And the second test, or in some cases the first test, when the cell phone was not present, they scored significantly higher than when the cell phone was present.
Carol Ann Hamilton is the author of Coping with Uncopable Parents. Adults dealing with parents can be even more trying during vacation time.
It is really the last thing that you want to do, hence my question. I know they're going to pester you to the hilt, and they're going to do everything to guilt you into it, as a should, and still, just as a starting question, do you really need to do this? At what compromise to your health, physical, emotional, mental, or otherwise, is this going to be, given that you only have a certain allotment for many of us across the course of a year?
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares another slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. New York City is going through a heat wave where temperatures are reaching near 100 degrees Fahrenheit. But he's not complaining.
We just run through a really tough period. But on the other hand, every time I hear about anybody having a tough period of something, I think to myself, how would it have been to go across this country in a covered wagon for 6 months to get to California? Now, no matter what the weather is, you sit in an air-conditioned train or plane having champagne. So stop complaining, everybody.
And there's lots and lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0414 was John Mao, manager for media services and classroom technology and chief engineer at WLSL LP 92.7, Dade City, Florida, that is St. Leo University Radio, and it's also a new home for the Stuff File program. The show is heard there at 8 p.m. on Fridays. Of course, if you're currently listening to us on WLSL LP 92.7, St. Leo University Radio, well, then you know what time it is, don't you? Yeah. Of course. Anyway, thank you very much, John, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the program, a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Police in Stratford, Connecticut arrested a man after he mistook a woman in the parking lot of a hotel for the prostitute he had ordered online. The woman sprayed him in the face with pepper spray. Her boyfriend was nearby and saw the commotion and ran over and sprayed the man in the face again with his own can of pepper spray. And by the way, how many men carry pepper spray around? Anyway, the couple was helping him get the irritant out of his eyes when police arrived, and he allegedly admitted that he was waiting for, quote, the shy Latina, unquote, that he had ordered, specifying he wanted a massage with a happy ending. Shortly after, the man announced to the media, "I will not resign." He is Dr. Noel Kao, a 39-year-old cardiovascular researcher and a commissioner on the Bridgeport Ethics Commission. Well, after things blew up in the media, Kao did resign from the commission. So, K.O. is now being K.O.'d, And he didn't get a happy ending, the one that he wanted, but it looks like the voters did. Anyway, a mother sparked outrage after revealing that she mixed her breast milk with brownies that she made for a school bake sale. The mother, who was not identified, told her Facebook followers that she did not understand why people made such a big deal about what she did. The woman wrote on Facebook, "I made brownies for my school bake sale that had breast milk in them. I didn't have time to run to the store and didn't think it was a big deal. Some of those kids could use the nutrition, to be honest." Wow. The post quickly went viral and received hundreds of angry responses. The woman was criticized for putting other children at risk of serious infectious diseases, which could be transferred through breast milk. One woman compared this mother's actions to mixing urine in lemonade. "It's like that one time I made lemonade with my urine because I ran out of water and didn't like to go to the store to get more." Another angry poster wrote, and I've got to kind of edit this one, "I'd punch this blank right in the throat for this blank. I don't care if the possible harmful disease is baked out. This psycho needs to be slapped." Well, I got nothing to add. I think that says it all. Her milkshake brings the boys to the yard. Anyway, still with milk, Dumit Strato from New York took to Facebook on June 26th from his throne room to excoriate his local Starbucks for making his venti iced coffee with regular milk instead of soy milk as he ordered it. Here is his quote. "I pooped 11 times since the AM. My bottom hurts from all the wiping. Do you think I enjoy soy milk? I don't order soy milk because I'm bored and I want my drink order to sound fancy. I order soy milk so that my bottom doesn't blast fire for 4 hours." For its part, Starbucks sent Strato a $50 gift card, and he told BuzzFeed that many women are trying to go out on a date after this too. Really? Women want to date you now because of your bathroom diplomacy? Maybe they just want to feed you regular milk. Yeah. Still with Java, could it have been the overconsumption of caffeine that provoked Londoner Kit Lovelace to scan all 236 episodes of Friends to chronicle how much coffee each character drank? Lovelace told the Huffington Post in June that he was disappointed that no one had ever collected data about the characters' coffee habits, so he meticulously studied how much they drank, how their consumption changed over the years, and how much they spent on coffee. Spoiler alert, Phoebe drank the most coffee, and collectively the group spent more than $2,000 on Joe over the course of the 10-season series. Another spoiler alert, Kit Lovelace has way too much time on his hands. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a South Florida family is perplexed after recently waking up to a loud thud, only to find that the mysterious sound was several packages of frozen Italian sausage. "It was like thunder, and it had wakened me out of a sleep," said Travis Adair. After finding two packages of sausage on their side yard, Travis and his son Austin decided to check the roof. Sure enough, there were three more packages of Italian pork sausage. A total of 15 pounds of Italian sausage was found in bags marked William Land Service, a land clearing company in Alabama. The homeowners were baffled about how the sausage ended up on their roof, so Austin called the company. "I called them, and the guy had no idea what I was talking about and probably thought I was crazy," Austin said. He even sent them pictures of the sausage, but has yet to hear back. "I would love to know what really happened because it's just so, so odd," Jenny Adair said. Well, hopefully the family decides to have a barbecue. I mean, it wouldn't cost them anything. After all, the sausage is on the house. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Are smartphones making us stupid? There is a new study that says the mere presence of your smartphone can reduce cognitive capacity. And the study says that's true even if the phone is turned off and face down. To talk about this, we are joined once again by clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber. He's the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, which is a nonprofit organization. He joins us on the line right now from Texas. Hi, John.
Hey. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Our brains shut down part of our system when we know that they have an easier path to the answer. So knowing you have Google or can, you know, search the internet for an answer, your brain takes the path of least resistance.
Is this almost Pavlovian? Because, again, the idea that it's face down and turned off still has the same effect. That's the part that baffles me.
It is Pavlovian. I mean, exactly. I mean, if you the study was pretty interesting. They gave people a cognitive test with their cell phone visible on their desk, turned on, turned off, upside down, and then they had them get up and put the cell phone in another room and walk in and take another equivalent cognitive test like immediately after. And the second test, or in some cases the first test, when the cell phone was not present, they scored significantly higher than when the cell phone was present.
Mm. Does this whole concept concern you? The fact that we are so adept at using a smartphone to the point where we kind of turn off our own brains?
Well, you know, as a biological entity, you know, our body wants to conserve as much energy as possible. So again, it's Pavlovian. We're not realizing we're doing this. And while the cell phone is there and we have it turned on and we can utilize it, it actually makes us, in a lot of cases, more accurate if we go to reliable sources online as opposed to some less scrupulous sources. And it makes things better for us in our decision-making process. My concern is, especially, you know, I work with a lot of college students. They walk in and they leave their phone there and they're taking a test and they can see it maybe upside down on the floor. They're going to get a lower score than if they leave it, and the research even tested this, in the bottom of their book bag with a bunch of other books and stuff on top of it where they can't access it. Your brain will function more efficiently. So what that means to you and me is we want to make sure our surgeon doesn't have a cell phone in the operating room.
Well, that last bit of information, even that seems to be an interesting point. Let's talk about the situations in schools. People are allowed to bring their computers and smartphones into schools. It's part of daily living now. But does it affect the actual, never mind the test taking, just the actual retention level of students during classes and lectures?
Well, you know, we've had computers since we basically had the internet in my classrooms. And I oftentimes teach really large lecture halls with 300-400 students in them. And one of the things I tell everybody is, you know, this is a learning environment, and you may be here because mom and dad told you to. And if you sit there and search the internet and don't pay attention to class, I'm not worried about you. It's the six rows behind you that's distracted by that. So I actually ask them to get up, especially if they're going to look at porn and stuff like that, to get in the back of the class. And that usually ends the question right there, because I also don't stand stagnant in front of the classroom. I take laps around the class, put my hand on the student's shoulder and say, hey, so what do you think about that? So I do things to keep my students active in class and not drifting off on what they're reading in Google or and stuff like that, because they don't want to be called on and not have an answer. I can't tell you every professor does that, but I think there's easy ways to deal with that whole situation.
The whole smartphone thing is, although ubiquitous and everywhere, still relatively new. I guess there's still some time before we reach a point where we have, say, 18, 19-year-olds who have known nothing but the use of a smartphone and have had it handy since they were very, very young. What do you feel, or how are you concerned about how our brains are used or not used in future generations when more and more of us are using these smartphones as a sort of additional memory source, as it were?
Well, I go back to when calculators became very small and portable, and when I was in school, and we're like, hey, why do we have to do all this stuff? You know, we got a calculator right here. And my teachers always said, what happens when the calculator runs out of batteries, when it doesn't work anymore? And today, that doesn't appear to be an issue, but we never know. I mean, it's real easy with EMP pulse, electromagnetic pulse. We don't have to be hit by any kind of nuclear weapon. They can go up in the stratosphere and blast a nuclear bomb up there that never has radiation issues for us, but that EMP will take out most of the computers in this country, which include the computers in your car, cell phones, everywhere else, unless it's isolated and protected from that, which isn't very difficult to do, but nobody wants to incur the cost of that, so we don't do it. What are we going to do? You know, how are we going to go and cash in your stock so you have cash to go buy food for your family? How are you going to do your job? And that's the question. And thankfully, at this point, we've never had to face that. And we may never have to face that. But it is a reality. And that's a concern. But I go back to the calculator problem. We argued with our teachers, but they made us learn the basics and figure out how to do things without the calculator. And then later, we were allowed to add the calculator to check our math to make sure we did it right. I watch kids today that are not told they have to learn times tables. They're not told they have to learn how to write in cursive. They're missing basic steps if we have a problem like that. And that could be very serious for us as a group. Now they're going to be individuals like yourself and me who grew up when we had to learn how to do everything manually, and that's not going to be a problem for us.
I just love it when I go into a store and I go to the cash and I get the receipt as to what I owe, and then I decide to give them a different sum so that it would make the change easier. But of course, Yes. This is after they've punched it into the cash register, so the change that they were going to give me is no longer applicable, and they cannot figure out what I've done.
Yes, I've got multitude of stories like that, exactly, and I agree with you. I like to have bigger bills because if I have ones, they just go. My kids pilfer them. Hey, can I have a soda here? Can I, you know? So whenever I end up breaking the bank and I have a bunch of ones, I'm like, hey, you know, I'd like a $5 bill back. So that's why I did that, because they look at me like I'm nuts. You're overpaying. No, I want a $5 bill back, not two ones and 30 cents, you know. So I give you three extra bills and 70 cents, and you give me a five. Or 70 cents and two extra bills. So, and I've had them call managers over, and I this is in a college town. I mean, and the managers looked at him and said, well, he's right. Give him his change back. And every time the person puts the extra money that I gave them down, puts the money in like they wanted to do it, and gives me the extra money plus the $5 bill back, so that I know their register's been short every time.
Wow. So getting back to my original question, and I said in the introduction, are smartphones making us stupid? And I'll add to that, or are we just being adaptive as human beings?
I think we're just being adaptive. I mean, we adapted with calculators. We made it through Elvis. We're going to make it through this.
Good point. John, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Awesome. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Dr. John Huber, Chairman for Mainstream Mental Health. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0414, and you'll find links to John's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment.
There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about coping with uncopable parents. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, will share another slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. But right now, we've got lots more Stuff File news here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, James Balcombe's awesome party business in Melbourne, Australia, had everything from bouncy castles to a stretch limo, but it seems he wasn't sure that would be enough to defeat his business rivals. So, police say, he offered one of his drivers $2,000, a shot, to burn out his competition. Five party businesses suffered a total of 10 fires. Balcombe even tried to avoid getting caught by having a fire set at Awesome Party, police say. There were massive explosions, a neighbor said, but it didn't help. Balcombe and his employee were arrested, along with two other people police say were in on the scheme. The total losses, police estimate, exceeded $2 million. Wow. How medieval. You have one bouncy cast dweller trying to overthrow other bouncy cast dwellers. It's like the 12th century all over again, only with hot air. And traffic on a major highway in England was disrupted for hours after a truck laden with chocolate bars burst into flames. Drivers faced long delays after parts of the highway in Kent, southern England, were closed as fire crews put out the blaze and road workers tried to clear the debris. A Highways England spokeswoman said some of the chocolate had melted onto the road. There were lots of chocolate bars everywhere. No injuries were reported, and all lanes on the highway reopened later in the afternoon. Kent Fire and Rescue Service said the cause of the blaze was unknown. The chocolate bars were reported to be Lion candy bars made by Nestle.
N-E-S-T-L-E-S, Nestle makes the very best chocolate.
Yes, they do. But road tar is a different story. And a serial underwear thief in Tokyo was finally snagged July 4th when he was caught on surveillance video stealing 9 women's undergarments that had been hung out to dry. 61-year-old Yasushi Kobayashi told police that he had been lifting lingerie for 20 years because he enjoys wearing them. Police found more than 1,000 pieces during a search of his home. Okay. I'm not going to spend time dwelling on his passion for wearing women's underwear because, you know, whatever floats your boat. Just ask yourself this question. Think of anything in life that you enjoy wearing, from the mundane to the extreme. Do you want or need 1,000 pieces of it? Seriously? 1,000? Wow. A witness at the Planet Fitness in Shelby Township, Michigan, saw a man run into the gym. All I basically saw was a guy running in with no shirt, Burns, socks, and a pair of gym shorts, the witness said. Wait a minute, did he say Burns? Something didn't look right. Then we heard him screaming and everybody started running around. He was just in pain, you know, Burns. I'd be screaming too. When police investigated, they found the man had been badly burned in a fire at his house, so he drove the mile, that's right, he drove the mile from his house to the gym to take a shower. They called an ambulance for him. Officers had seen him flee his home and realized he'd likely had started the fire while allegedly cooking meth. The unnamed man had burns over the top half of his body and was in serious condition at a local hospital. Because of the toxicity of meth chemicals, the area around Planet Fitness was evacuated until a hazmat team could decontaminate the area around the gym and the man's house. You know, some people need a gym to motivate them to exercise. Others find their own motivation. And by the way, did he really think that just a shower was going to help his situation? Really? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, doctors intending to perform cataract surgery on a 67-year-old woman in Britain found something rather unexpected. 17 contact lenses mashed together in her right eye. In a case report published in the journal BMJ, the doctors said that the woman had worn monthly disposable contact lenses for 35 years and had deep-set eyes and poorer vision in that eye, which they said might have contributed to a failure to remove some of the lenses. The doctors said the 17 lenses were bound together by mucus. A further 10 were found by the surgeon using a microscope. Rupal Marjoria, a specialist trainee in ophthalmology, said the large mass would have caused quite a lot of irritation. The patient had chalked it up to old age and dry eye. Wow. With 17 lenses, how is it possible that her eyes didn't sound like a ship's Morse code signal lamp when she blinks? Yikes. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? At its best, summer vacation should be a time for relaxing and recharging. For many, it may mean feeling forced to spend time with insistent parents. Carol Ann Hamilton is the author of Coping with Uncopable Parents. Carol Ann joins us on the line right now from Mississauga, Ontario. Hi, Carol Ann.
Hi, Peter. It's lovely to be with you and your audience today. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program. So this is almost, when you talk about uncopable parents, to some people this might also be, you know, the unspeakable. People don't really want to necessarily talk about this, but a lot of people have to deal with this.
Well, you know, it is a common thing, right? Because notwithstanding other holidays and occasions such as holiday season and Thanksgiving and so on, but you know, a lot of people have expectations from their parents even in the summertime, precious as vacations are. So, yeah, nobody likes to talk about it, but it's often a pressing reality from those insistent parents, isn't it?
Mm. Now, what happens as an adult, and this might be something else that you might touch on, what happens as an adult if you have what you say is uncopable parents, and you marry someone who has uncopable parents, and you're going on vacation, and now you have to decide where you're going, and who are you going to upset more, and who are you going to tolerate more?
It wouldn't that be a double whammy combination, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, with your partner, it's going to be a difficult dialogue because you already laid out the parameters, Peter. Who are you going to have to deal with first? Who will you upset more? You know, gosh help you if you have to spend time with both. We're here talking about summer vacations, but just in general, it's a negotiated element, I suppose. And I would, even as early in our conversation as we are, I would suggest that people also step back just a notch to think about what really are the expectations. Has this developed over a period of time where it's just become the norm? Do you really have to, without World War III breaking out?
It's funny you should say World War, only because I remember back, oh gosh, I guess it's 30 years now, the television series 30-something, which was on ABC for about 4 years. And
mm-hmm. Yes.
I remember watching the very first episode of that show, and there was a line that the character Michael Stedman said to his wife, and it's a line that I never forgot from all these years. He just kind of quizzically turns to his wife and says, "What exactly is the statute of limitations on parental war crimes?"
Yes, you can hear that makes me laugh, because if you do have uncopable parents in any fashion, those who are expectant, those who are, you know, demanding, belligerent, whatever that may be, where they just expect you to give up your last drop of life's blood for them, including those few weeks of precious vacation you have, it is really the last thing that you want to do. Hence my question about, I know they're going to pester you to the hilt and they're going to do everything to guilt you into it as a should. And still, just as a starting question, do you really need to do this? At what compromise to your health, physical, emotional, mental, or otherwise, is this going to be, given that you only have a certain allotment for many of us across the course of a year?
Okay, the title of your book is Coping with Uncopable Parents. So let's just deal with that word or that terminology. In your estimation, what is an uncopable parent? And conversely, because you have a wide audience here, what if someone listening to this right now is an uncopable parent? What would you want to say to them?
Right. Well, I'd break it down into the two parts of your question. You can tell an uncopable parent because they are going to fight you every step of the way, no matter what their age is, to really expect you to do certain things. If they're a little bit on the younger side, they will demand the vacation time together. If they're aging parents, like those that I deal with, they will fight you to do what's right, whether it's moving out of their home that they've occupied for a while, or going into assisted living, or getting in home care, or releasing the car keys, or, you know, you name it. There is no subject on which you will not get a pure and outright fight from them. Never mind perhaps situations like alcoholism, which is something I dealt with my dad, paranoid schizophrenia with my mom, any of the diseases, addictions, or other aspects of life that can make it very hard from the so-called child perspective. For the uncopable parent, perhaps listening in because of the wide audience, well, I mean no insult. Rather, I'm encouraging all of us to think about our behaviors around one another in the family dynamic. And is there not some way that we can really, as the years go along, find a fashion in which we can ultimately heal some of those long-standing family dynamics? Can we not find a way as adults to work out long-standing squabbles or other matters so that we can actually want to spend time together? For the parents, I'm not going to define you as uncopable, but can you understand your child's perspective? From the child's perspective, the adult child, can you understand why your parents would want to spend that time, because their years may be waning to a certain degree? So it's almost like I'm asking all of us, how can we work together rather than continue these rifts, vacation or otherwise?
Is part of the onus on us, the so-called children, the adult children? Because one of the things, and I've discussed this on shows with many people and psychologists over the years, especially around holiday periods, is that when families get together generally, and I'm talking about families as in with plenty of kids, you have brothers and sisters, everyone seems to revert back to a childhood persona of who they were when they go back home to see mom and dad. And you act the same way with your siblings you may have acted with when you were living in the house together. You act the same way with your parents. And then you later on regret that because you weren't being the adult that you've now become once you're back home with your parents. So is part of the onus on us?
I would actually say so. Much as that awareness can be hard to arrive at, but because we have presumably traveled a journey of experience, growing maturity and wisdom across the years, I do place a large part of the onus on each of us individually to access the authentic self that we have become. Yes, I know, because I've done it too, just by the way. Yeah, the reversion, I understand all of that. However, there is some means by which we need to find that person who is being true to ourselves as well. Back to my starting question, is this really something out of guilt, out of a should, or is it something that you want to do? And if you still elect to, you know, there are several options, aren't there here really, Peter? If you elect to go into the actual home in which you grew up, for instance, given we're talking about longstanding patterns, I would say that it's important to make sure that that environment works for you. If possible, please stay in a nearby hotel, not in an environment that reminds you of those past, and find ways to have outings as much as in public, even if grandma and grandpa have to have a nap while you and your own family possibly go out and enjoy some tourist destinations. Mm.
One of the other things, too, we live in North America. We live in what is virtually a melting pot of various societies coming together. I, for instance, grew up in a neighborhood where the one thing we all had in common, even though we our parents all came from different lands, the one thing we had in common is that we were first-generation kids of immigrant parents. And there's a different structure, a different expectation of what parents want their children to do and be, even as adults, when they come from different cultures. Does that play into it at all?
There probably is an additional factor that we have to consider. I mean, my mom was two. My dad, on that side of the family, not so much. So, I mean, that type of parent probably would love to spend 24/7 with you. And there's a certain familiarity, isn't there, with having family members around you. So we want to understand the parent's perspective, even while we're creating awareness for everybody concerned here. So it does play into it. And as we get used to perhaps life in a relatively newer situation where there are other factors around us, like, you know, cultural expectations in the land to which we have come, where maybe there's not as much of a family cohesiveness, perhaps that needs to be taken account of for those who are first generation without losing the appreciation for the bonds that family can create.
You have a website, copingwithuncopableparents.com. What will people find when they go there?
I would love for them, Peter, to hop on there and access my free Elder Care Rescue Guide, which is chock-a-block with about a baker's dozen of useful tips and techniques right away. They can obviously access my books there, and there are a couple of workbooks as well about nurturing yourself and the one based on the book Coping with Uncopable Parents that we cited. So please feel free to download that extra offer of the Elder Care Rescue Guide.
Excellent. Carol Ann, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
I appreciate you, Peter, and thank you for the opportunity.
Carol Ann Hamilton, author of Coping with Uncopable Parents. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0414, and you'll find links to Carol Ann's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In today's competitive job market, one thing almost every college student hopes to get before they graduate is an internship. Students know that one of the best ways to get the experience they need is to get an internship while they're still in school. Unfortunately, it's getting harder to find internships these days because of government regulation. In recent years, the U.S. Labor Department prohibited unpaid internships in the private sector unless the internship meets six criteria. One of them is that a for-profit employer can get no immediate advantage from the intern's activities. Let's be fair. Since good internships are supposed to provide meaningful work, it's virtually impossible for any employer to say that an intern has provided them with no advantage. So, fewer and fewer companies are providing internships because they can't afford them. And that's a shame. There are two places that can still provide unpaid internships, though. Congress and the White House. Of course, they write the laws. Learn more at CenterForAmericaTV.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again,
Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, in what was recently sweltering New York City. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing just fine, but let me tell you something. It's not over yet, because New York, as you know, gets four very distinct seasons, one of which is the summer where we get temperatures over 100. Yes, I said over 100. And the other is the winter time, where the temperatures are below freezing. And then, of course, we have spring and fall. But anyway, we just run through a really tough period. But on the other hand, every time I hear about anybody having a tough period or something, I think to myself, how would it have been to go across this country in a covered wagon for 6 months to get to California? Now, no matter what the weather is, you sit in an air-conditioned train or plane having champagne. So stop complaining, everybody.
Okay, so you just mentioned two methods of transportation, but you've left out one, and I understand recently there have been quite a few delays on your subway system.
Yeah, it's just typical political nonsense, politicians not doing their jobs. It's just the infrastructure hasn't been taken care of. And keep in mind, this is no little railroad. There's millions of people that ride on it, and they just haven't been taking care of it. And as a matter of fact, just a couple of days ago, we had another derailment. So the system is falling apart a little bit. The media and the politicians are making much more out of it than it is, but it really is a mess. And, you know, if it's 100 degrees on the surface, you get down into the subway, the cars are all, air-conditioned, but the stations aren't.
Wow. So I'm guessing then, with all the delays and the extra heat down there and all the problems with the subways, would it mean that more people are, dare I say, taking taxis?
No, you really can't change that. And the reason for that is that we have 13,000 yellow cabs, which is the same number we had in 1938. So our industry is really doesn't fluctuate in any way, because we're always operating at the maximum anyway.
Okay, so you started off by talking about the heat wave. And one thing people always say during a heat wave is hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. So have you been refilling your water bottle?
Yeah, well, everybody does that in New York. And the reason for that is our water is very, very good. And so what you do is you buy a water bottle and then you refill it. And it looks cool that you're walking around with spring water. And we've all been doing that. Now, all of a sudden, people have started to say, researchers and what have you, that it's very bad to reuse plastic. In other words, you shouldn't put that water in there time after time after time, any more than you should use a plastic container for keeping food. I don't know how much validity is in it, but of course the people who make that stuff are going crazy, complaining and saying there's nothing to worry about. But frankly, when we save something in the refrigerator that's been cooked by my delicious wife making her delicious food, we use, you know, like glass. As far as the water bottle goes, I hadn't thought of it, and frankly, I'm going to start having a little thermos instead.
Or you can buy one of those silver cylinders that they have for water bottles that people seem to think is really cool nowadays.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
Okay. Now, one of the things I saw on your website, Gabby.com, you share the story of the situation with the confiscated elephant ivory. Tell us about that.
Okay, New York is very big on endangered species, and that's why here things are very strictly enforced. So, for instance, you'll see a lot of ladies wearing fur coats, but they better not be from an endangered species so you can actually be arrested. They're farm-raised animals, which isn't so nice to the farm-raised animals, but at least something is done, at least. There is a law that you can't do that. Well, that's the same thing with ivory. I mean, all ivory basically is banned in New York City. And the police department, under a lot of different circumstances, has been confiscating it. So what they're going to do this week and probably next week is they're going to smash up all of the ivory, you know, the little figurines and the little things that they have in Central Park, making it sort of like Smash the Ivory Day, which is a shame because now somebody probably had killed the elephant, taken the ivory, turned it into some kind of little figurines, and yet in the final analysis, it's going to end up and throw away. But you can't give it away. You got to get rid of it. So that's what's going to happen. I'm not sure of the date exactly, but if somebody happens to be coming to New York in the next week or so, you might want to Google to find out when and where they're doing it if you'd like to see a lot of ivory being smashed by a bulldozer.
And I understand from your website that there's more than 650 pieces of ivory with an estimated value of more than $6 million.
Yeah, that they've confiscated under certain ways. On the other hand, a very serious offense in New York City is throwing paint on somebody wearing a fur coat. For that, you can go to the slammer. Mm. So on one hand, you sort of have the yin and the yang of this environmental thing.
Okay. One of the other things, I mean, every city, unfortunately, has a homeless population, and New York is no different. But people are now starting to complain, or at least some government officials, about giving the homeless panhandlers money?
Yeah, well, you see, it's obvious now because the weather is warm. And so you have both real homeless and fake homeless. For your nice listeners, chances are they're not going to see real homeless. They're kind of hidden away in shelters and things like that. The homeless you're going to see are going to be in Times Square, and they're all fakes, or they'll be walking on the subway trains. As a matter of fact, New York has undergone or is undergoing a program now urging people not to give money to somebody who's panhandling, and the reason for that is the city claims, and I think it's true, that we have adequate social services, and you're either getting ripped off by a fake, or you're letting a person who really needs some help, not letting them go into a shelter in a way.
Hmm. I don't know if you have this happening in your city streets, and I know it happens here. At certain intersections, you might have somebody walking in between the cars at a traffic light with a sign saying, please give me money for food. Do you have that kind of situation?
Yeah.
I was just the other day, I was on a street, and I was at a traffic light, and there was a line of cars waiting for the light to change, and this guy was walking between the cars, and the car in front of me opened the window and handed the guy an apple, and the look of disgust on his face was priceless.
Well, all of that kind of came to a grinding halt in New York, because a number of years ago, and you might remember the story, somebody did that to an off-duty cop. The off-duty cop took out his gun and shot him.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, of course, the cop was deranged, and I don't know what they ever did with him, but that really stopped a lot of people from walking up. That was not only people mooching money, but also the squeegee people.
Right, right, right. And we had those, too. We still do in some areas have the so-called squeegee punks. I think the international sign of get away from my car is when you start your wipers.
Yeah, well, that is, too. And it's a shame there's all that confrontation because, to my simplistic approach, you solve the homeless problem and then you don't have the confrontation things. But the politicians don't care. No. I mean, de Blasio, our mayor, is so full of baloney. He's just a con man. That's all he is.
Okay, so let's go from the homeless to someone who might be looking for a home. I understand that there is an adorable little Cape Cod-style cottage that's actually sitting on top of another house. I saw the picture on your website.
Is that the most delicious thing you've ever seen in your life?
It's cute.
You're right smack in the middle of the city, and yet you have a house. And, I mean, it's just a glorious thing. It just intrigued me so much. I have no connection in any way to the real estate broker or anything like that other than I'd love to buy it. And that's why there's a little bit of a news story there, because not only was it something that most New Yorkers weren't aware of, we didn't know that it was for sale. And I think somebody has already bought it.
It was on the market, according to your website, for $3.5 million. And for that price, you get the little house and the house underneath it? Is that right?
Yeah, well, there's an apartment underneath it. But I don't know about the sale, whether that's going to be. But, I mean, that's just a little bit of a hideaway. I mean, it's fantastic.
Were you thinking of putting a bid in on it?
If I won the lotto today, that'd be my first stop. I love the idea. I mean, in my lifetime, I've lived in houses, I've lived in apartments. And at this stage of the game, I like living in an apartment because everything is taken care of. You know, I don't have to change a light bulb. But I used to like to do the lawn and all that kind of stuff. Having a house on top of an apartment house, oh, man, is that delight.
I plan to continue my streak of oh for forever for never, ever having mowed a lawn, something I've never done, will never do. Ever.
Well, what can I tell you? If I ever have a house again, we'll not only invite you for dinner, we'll one.
I think I'll pass. Before we let you go, a celebrity sighting. I understand you saw a former governor.
You know, I always run into difficulty when we talk about this because you're too subtle, and it proves over and over again that we don't rehearse this in any way. I don't remember in the note who I said I saw.
Okay, so when I say former governor, that should kind of narrow it down.
No, we had lots of governors. Oh, that was Arnold.
Yes.
Okay. See, you should have said former weightlifter. Yeah, Schwarzenegger was on Fifth Avenue doing some shopping. And my observation, and by the way, I have nothing against the guy other than I understand he was a terrible governor. But what I'm about to say is kind of rude, but I don't know how I can help it. I think he's ugly. No, he looked like somebody who had been body weighting and lifting for an entire life. And now everything is like sagging. And you can't go by what you see in the movies. Now, mind you, I realize I'm being mean, but I just was shocked because my image of him was not an old man with lots of wrinkly, pruny skin.
But he is still bodybuilding, so I'm going on the assumption you didn't tell him this to his face.
Yeah, sure I did. I said, I can take you.
Oh, wow. Well, I know you're in air-conditioned splendor right now as we speak, so I'll just say try and stay out of the heat over the next couple of days and weeks and enjoy the summer that New York has to offer. People can always find out more information by going to your website at www.gabby.com. They can send you an email to peter@gabby.com. I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again, sir.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're in the home stretch here on this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way, but I've got one more Stuff File story to share with you here on a program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, 38-year-old Leanne Sepeliak and her boyfriend, Grady Spencer III, lived in the basement of Leanne's parents' Penn Hills Township, Pennsylvania home. Now, there is no bathroom in the basement, so for convenience, they say, they urinated in buckets. After an argument, says Officer Dennis Roble of the Penn Hills Police, Spencer fell asleep, and Leanne poured gasoline onto the bed where Spencer was sleeping. She then lit a cigarette with a match and threw the match onto the bed, igniting the gasoline. It was 4:40 a.m., and naturally, Spencer leapt out of bed, screaming in pain, which apparently made Leanne feel bad, so she doused the flames with what she had available, the contents of their buckets. The parents, when they heard screaming and smelled the smoke, helped to put him out, I think with the same urine, and went to the hospital, says Police Chief Howard Burton. Spencer was listed in serious condition with burns to 25% to 35% of his body, and the hospital called the police. Leanne was charged with attempted homicide, arson, and reckless endangering another person, and was released after posting $100 bail. That's it, $100? Wow. From his hospital bed, Spencer, a landscaper, says he had gasoline on him because he was earlier fixing a weed whacker while completely drunk, and the whole thing was just an accident. If she didn't use the urine, it would have been a lot worse. He said, my crotch would have been melted if she didn't, and I only thank her for that. Thank her? Thank her? Dear Lord, he's awfully calm about this. Most men would have been pissed off. Well, I guess when you think of the contents of the bucket, I guess he actually was. Yeah. Wow. Anyway, we're at that time, boys and girls, the moment you've all been waiting for, near the end of the program, that very last story. Yes, it's time once again for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Calling 911 to report a stolen bag of cocaine probably wasn't the best idea for a self-described Florida drug dealer, but Okaloosa sheriff's officials wrote on Facebook that 32-year-old David Blackman did just that on Sunday morning. The Post says Blackman called 911 to report a robbery in Fort Walton Beach. Blackman told the responding deputy that someone entered his car and took $50 and about a quarter ounce of cocaine from the center console. The report says the deputy spotted some cocaine and a crack rock on the console and a crack pipe on the floorboard by the driver's side door. Blackman was charged with possession of cocaine and resisting arrest without violence. Now, why, oh why, would you call the cops to report that someone had stolen your bag of cocaine? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0414. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0414. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Evolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. See you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.